Welcome to The Human Perspective with internationally recognized badass disability activist Judy Human.
This week, Judy is chatting with Wendy Liu and Kara Reedy about disability inclusion and ableism in journalism. Wendy Liu is the staff news editor and national reporter at HuffPost, covering the intersection of disability, politics, and culture. She has also written for The New York Times, Teen Vogue, Refinery 29, and many others. She is a regular speaker on disability representation in the media and is working to develop a curriculum to educate reporters on how to cover disability issues and train newsrooms to be more inclusive of disabled journalists. Kara Reedy is the program manager for DREDF's Disability Media Alliance Project, also known as DMAP. DMAP is changing the way disability is represented in all forms of media, from television, film, and journalism. Kara previously worked at CNN for 10 years. In 2015, she quit CNN and freelanced at NPR on weekends, All Things Considered, and she co-produced a short documentary for The Guardian called Dwarfism and Me. Judy, Wendy, and Kara talk seriously about the ableism in the newsroom for disabled journalists and the reluctance of many publications to write stories that center disabled people, but also about how trailblazing journalists like Kara and Wendy are working to make newsrooms more inclusive. The Human Perspective is produced by me, Becca Howell, and Judy Human. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to The Human Perspective. So let's roll up, lay down, dance around, get some snacks ready, whatever makes you feel best, and let's meet our guest today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Human Perspective. Today, our story is going to be focusing on journalism, and we have two great guests, Kara Reedy, who is currently program manager for the Disability Media Alliance Project, and Wendy Liu, who is currently the staff news editor and national reporter for the Huffington Post. So thank you all for being here today. All three of us have disabilities. I had polio, I use a motorized wheelchair, and Wendy?
I have bilateral vocal cord paralysis, and I wear a tracheostomy tube that helps me breathe.
Kara?
And I have dwarfism, specifically achondroplasia.
So let me start off by asking you, why did you get involved in writing and subsequently become journalists?
Yeah, so I always knew that I wanted to be a writer, specifically a journalist. I went to college for journalism at UNC Chapel Hill, and then I went to Columbia for graduate school to get my master's degree. I think it was after I graduated from Columbia, I got a couple of fellowships. One was at AM New York, which is a New York City-based subway paper. And then a fellowship at Bustle, which is a millennial news website. And it was at Bustle that I started writing about disability specifically. I knew, like, back in college, I loved writing stories and giving a platform to people who oftentimes don't get a platform that they deserve to tell their stories. So, but it wasn't until I got to Bustle where I had an editor who knew that I was especially passionate about disability issues. So she asked me, you know, would you want to write, some personal essays about being disabled yourself? And it was very much kind of like a low pressure, you know, if I wanted to do that, that was great. But, you know, I didn't have to if I didn't want to. But I decided that, sure, why not? So I wrote a few stories, and I realized that the stories I wrote about disability in particular were the ones that got a lot of attention, you know, on Twitter, social media. And I realized this was an area that was lacking a lot of coverage. And two, this was an area that a lot of people really identified with, you know, other disabled people who listened to my stories and told me they felt less alone, or where they felt like, you know, I had those experiences too when I was younger. So I wanted to make disability part of my beat, part of my reporting. But I also wanted it, I knew that disability is something that, a quarter of people identify as being disabled. And there's a very rich culture and history with the disability rights movement that I knew I was just one part of. So that's sort of how my passion for disability reporting came about.
When did you begin to identify as a disabled person?
I think I always identified as being disabled. Back in school, I had an IEP, individualized education plan. And so in school, I would get accommodations, and I knew that was part of the reason was because I had a disability. So I think I always identified as being disabled, but it wasn't until later that I kind of discovered that there was an entire community of people who, weren't just like me. There's, the community is full of people of so many different kinds of disabilities, but it was a group that I felt like I could identify with. And we had some shared experiences of ableism growing up and of feeling a sense of pride of who we are and where we, the history of disability rights over time. It's something that I grew to learn more and more about when I was older.
And Kara, how did you get sucked into this field?
So I did not go to school for it. I was a theater/political science major. And I had some problems because I wanted to be an actor. And so I faced some discrimination in my program. So I ended up floating away from that because I felt kind of like, if I can't do this in college, what's it going to be like when I'm going out to auditions? So I just was like, I'm going to leave it alone. And then I ended up in art school for photography. Also faced some discrimination there. But after I graduated, I was in Philadelphia for art school. My friend was moved to New York with me. And so I ended up in New York looking for assistantships in photography. But it was right after 9/11, so there was no jobs. So I ended up in the accounting department at Time Warner, which is hilarious because I don't do math. I was there and I wanted to get out because I don't do math. And I stayed a year. And if you stayed a year, you could transfer anywhere within the Time Warner world. So I looked around and CNN had a job open. I applied for it, didn't get it. And then I ran into this woman that I knew from the communal Time Warner cafeteria. And she said, "Hey, I know you, but I don't know your name." And I said, "Well, I'm Kara." And she said, "I'm Arlene." And then she said, "Well, what do you do?" And I told her. And then she said, "Well, I'm Lou Dobbs' assistant." And I was like, "Great. I've been trying to get into CNN." Because what I noticed about CNN as opposed to the other people in the cafeteria is they just seemed more lively and excited about what they were doing. They were in the cafeteria, just more gregarious. And I was like, that's where I want to be. So I got there. I ended up becoming an anchor assistant for the morning show for Miles and Soledad O'Brien. They're not married, but they have the same last name. And then they got pulled off the morning show and I went with Soledad to the documentary unit. And once I got there, it was like everything connected, my photography, the theater I had done. And I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. So I, associate produced some documentaries, quite a few actually. And then I ended up having some trouble with Soledad for various reasons. There's a time limit on anchor assistants just because of the nature of it. because you end up taking care of them in ways that you're not normally, it's not like a regular assistant job. So I ended up getting transferred to the business digital unit, which back then no one thought of. They thought digital was some like foreign desert, deserted place because it hadn't like popped up. And so once I got there, I said, well, this is kind of cool too. And where I went to Loyola Chicago, which is a very writing intensive school, and said, well, I can write. And so I started pitching stories. I started writing for the food blog, and I wrote for the tech vertical, and I can't remember where else. But then my food editor, Kat Kinsman, approached me about doing an essay about my dwarfism. And she said, like, just make it raw, like, tell us all the things that you feel and the things that you've experienced, because I think people need to know this. And so that was 2014, and I did, and it opened up a world that I didn't really know was there. I grew up in the dwarfism community, but not, you know, I grew up in St. Louis, so there's not a ton of us there. But I ended up getting all of these emails and Facebook messages from people saying, this is exactly what I feel. I've never heard anyone in major news media talk about this. And so then that kind of was like, well, if that's happening, what stories are actually being told? Because we don't talk about disability. And I looked around the room and no one was writing about it. So then I started advocating and pitching stories about disability with a lot of failure rate. But what it taught me, like, I didn't get a lot of stories published about it, but I did a lot of research while I was there. And I learned from the editors and what to look for. So even though I didn't get stories published, I was back there doing all the research and learning about it and learning about disability culture while I was at work.
I'm wondering, have either of you experienced ableism either in pursuit of jobs or while in the jobs that you've been in? And what do you see as some of the causes of the ableism, and what are areas of work that you're doing to try to address it?
Yeah, I have definitely experienced discrimination during like hiring process, particularly one job interview sticks out in my mind because it was right after I graduated Columbia and I was trying to apply for jobs. And I won't name the organization, but it was for a journalism job. And during the interview, I remember the editor asked me, like, kind of randomly during the interview, like, so does the winter weather affect you? And felt kind of out of the blue. And also, this was a desk job. So it was an editing job. It wasn't, going out into fields, but even if it was, it wouldn't affect me. And so I, even then, like, his question didn't really have anything to do with what I was talking about or with the role itself. It was literally just like, does the winter weather affect you? And it caught me off guard. And I think I asked him to repeat his question. And he was like, does it make you dry? And he like gestured at my trach tube. And I was like, I can work and do my job at my desk and outside, doesn't affect me. I remember that question just sort of threw me off for the rest of the day. It was 4 hours of job interviews, and that was my first interview. So for the rest of the day, I was just kind of very stressed out thinking about, did I blow it? Did I say something I wasn't supposed to? And it's tough as a disabled person applying for jobs, because if you're asked about your disability during an interview, One, especially if it's not related to the role. I mean, like, they're not supposed to ask you questions. And so, but as the candidate, it's tough in the moment because you don't want to mess up your chances, but also, like, it feels, it's a personal question. It's a surprise. You worry about messing up the interview, even though they shouldn't have asked in the first place. So just things like that. I mean, I think there's so many different reasons for why ableism exists. I think workplace culture in general needs to be more inclusive of disability in general, making it so that disabled candidates feel comfortable, you know, applying for jobs, making sure it's accessible on a practical level, but also making it clear that disabled and non-disabled people are welcome and are embraced for what they can do on the job, regardless, you know. And what I'm doing now, I mean, so I'm a journalist at UpPost, like Judy mentioned before. But I think pretty much every role that I've had since graduating, I've tried to sort of help steer the culture of the workplace into being more inclusive of disability. And it's tough because oftentimes when you're the only disabled person in a workplace, you know, yes, they hired you, but that's not enough. You can't just point to the one disabled person and be like, all right, we checked out the box. That's it. We're inclusive now. It's really about making sure that, you know, people across all backgrounds have a seat at the table and have the ability to make decisions that steer the direction of the company itself. So there's just so much more there beyond representation. So at my job at HuffPost, I'm an editor. So I work with reporters. I work with other editors. I've helped, I've co-hosted trainings on disability reporting, interview techniques, how to use accurate, neutral language when writing about disability. So that's just kind of a glimpse into a few of the things that I focus on day to day, trying to shift the culture in the workplace in general.
I'll broaden the question a little bit because of the work that you're doing right now. Kara is, well, maybe you can talk a little more about your history around issues of ableism that you've experienced and why you feel it's important now to be looking at creating an organization of disabled journalists.
Sure. I experienced ableism all the way throughout my time in journalism. So, I mean, like when you're receiving any kind of discrimination, most of the time they're not going to say, we're not going to give it to you because we're not going to give you this job because you're you. Right. Like,
well, that's actually, I just want to say, and I'm not going to belabor it right now, but because I'm 73, in fact, my experiences in the beginning when there were no laws is that people were quite blatant about why you didn't get a job. Now it's more subtle.
It is more subtle. And so now I did hear things from other people. Like there was this one time I was working with this editor and she was the personal finance editor. And then one of the reporters was like, we should do something fun. And I worked in comedy. I took improv and I was like in the middle of my improv life during this time. And so people had seen what I had done. And this reporter went to the editor and said, can we like get Kara to do man on the street stuff for personal finance? And the editor was like, yes, let's do it. So we came up with a plan and we were like getting ready to do it. We're going to do some man on the street stuff. And then the editor went into the video manager, general manager, and told him this big plan that we had come up with. And he looked at her. I was not in the room, but I trust that she's telling me the truth. And he said, "You know, we can't put her on camera. We can't put her on camera. That'll be exploitative."
What did she say? Do you know?
She got angry and tried to plead the case. And then she came out and told me directly. And I could tell that it had just happened because she has an anger tail on her face where her face gets tight and everything's red. And she just was like, "I need to let you know what happened," because she wanted it to be clear that it wasn't her stopping this. It was him. She wanted me to know, like, who I was dealing with. But throughout my time at CNN in particular, and I'll name them and I don't mind, there was a lot of ableism. There were a lot of comments thrown. When I was working for Soledad, we were at one of her friend's restaurants because we were holding our holiday party there. And I got there first to pay the bill and do the stuff. And he turns to me and he says, "Well, Soledad's really happy that you're here." And I was like, "Oh, I love this job. I'm happy too." And he goes, he thought this would be funny. And he said, "Well, we were drinking the other night and she said, well, she had a fat one and it didn't work out. She had a skinny one and it didn't work out. So she's hoping that the dwarf will."
Oh.
But there was like years and years of, those are like the real, like, out loud ones. But there were years and years of me pitching stories and being told, "Oh, nobody cares about disability. Oh, like, just, ew, gross." And one time I pitched a fashion story that had nothing to do with disability, other than, like, we may interview some disabled people about fashion. But it was generally a story about, it was a personal finance story about fashion and how to, like, create a cool wardrobe on a budget. Like, how do you do it? And I pitched it and said, "Look, I'm a dwarf. I have to get everything tailored. You guys know you don't pay me that much. And here's all the outfits that I can do. I'd love to do, like, a series on this." And I'd actually worked for a stylist when I was in photography school. And he looked at me, the editor looked at me and he goes, "Is this another dwarf story? We're not in the market for more dwarf stories." I said, "No, this is a fashion story. And I happen to be a dwarf telling a fashion story." And he's like, I see this as a dwarf story and we're not pitching that. Like, we're not doing those things." So it was just like and I gave up. Like, it's at a certain point at CNN, I just was like, "Forget it. I'm not pitching anything because there's no point. I'm not going to get my feelings hurt if I keep pitching stuff. So I'll just hurry up and get out of here. I can go do something else." And what I will say is all of those people are still in management positions at various large media organizations. One of them works at the New York Times. The other one's still at CNN. So when people wonder, like, why we can't get disability covered or why we can't get it covered properly, these are the people making the decisions.
I mean, I think the story that you're telling about including disabled people in stories on fashion is really an example of what we're trying to do. It's not just have separate stories on disabled people, but being able to integrate our issues into mainstream issues.
Yeah, that's something that, disability, it's part of every beat. It's not just siloed into health or feel good t-shirts, like Kara was trying to pitch, like, it's part of fashion, education, politics, across the board. And I was listening to Kara's story, and it's just when the people in management have that sort of mindset, we wonder, like, how come disabled people can't get promoted or can't get more jobs? That is why. And it reminds me of a different experience, but it reminded me of the time also when I was about to graduate from Columbia, and we were taking a tour at a really big newsroom, a global newsroom. And I remember we were in the, like, it was a broadcast newsroom, and we were right by one of the producer's offices, and he came out to talk to us, the students. And at one point, he, like, you know, he looked at me. I guess he was sort of, we were chatting casually with him, and he looked at me and he did a double take and said, "What happened to you?" And there was silence, and all of the other students, like my classmates, looked at me, and it was so awkward and uncomfortable. And, you know, when people ask me that, I have a whole spiel. I say, "Oh, I have a disability. I have trach tube helps me breathe." But I remember the way that he worded that, you know, "What happened to you?" There's just so much assumption and disrespect and ableism right in those few words. And we were there, you know, as students, hoping to network, maybe get some leads on potential jobs. And it's like, you know, how can you say or think that to, you know, anybody, really? So that was just what Kara's story reminded me.
So I have a follow-up question to that, which is, given that you'd been with your classmates, I presume, for a fair amount of time, did you talk about what happened after you left that building, and what was their response to you?
No, it was never brought up after that. Nobody said anything to me afterward. Nobody said anything in the moment. Everybody just kind of looked at me at the same time to see what I was going to say. And then I said it. And then I think maybe the producer might have said, "That's sorry," or "That's horrible." I can't remember, but none of my classmates, you know,
they did not
set, you know, address.
They didn't take it as a learning moment to say.
No, I think maybe they might have been afraid of further offending me if they brought it up to me later. But yeah, it was just sort of like a moment, and then it was over. But I remember it, you know, 4 or 5 years later. So,
I mean, Kara, I know that one of the reasons that you're working on a journalism association and work that you're doing is presenting on panels. And I know, Wendy, you do the same thing. So part of the discussion that we've been having makes me think about, what is the way that you feel we can be educating people about what ableism is and the harm that it does and the adverse effect that it has, I would say, particularly in journalism, because of the negative views that editors and others have, which prevent appropriate coverage.
The biggest thing that it does is it allows people to die in silence. I mean, you know, look at the pandemic. We all know that disabled people were more affected by it than anyone else. And then people of color with disabilities were more affected, specifically Black and Black, Latino, and Native American. But if you're not looking for it and you're not covering it, then how are you, the point of journalism is to keep everybody's feet to the fire. And if you're absent on your watch for 26% of the population, then you're not doing your job. That's just the bottom line. You're not doing your job. And, you know, newsrooms right now are transforming themselves, not by choice, but by force, because people are speaking up and they're saying, I'm not taking this anymore. Here's the problem with disability. There's not enough of us in the newsroom to do that. And the ones, and maybe there are some people that aren't out. Like, if I frankly, like, who would choose to be out in these very ableist places? Because it puts a target on your back to get fired. It puts a target on your back to, you know, if you're not producing as much as they think you should, then they can blame it on your disability and then say, well, you know, we can't hire any more of those people because they're not doing the work. And so you're alone. You're alone in these places. You have no one to go to. Like, I'm African American, I'm Black. Like, I could go to the Black Journalists Association and great, but like, there's a missing piece that they don't understand about my situation. So their advice and stuff is great, but it doesn't really hit the mark for me because I have the intersections. So if we don't, the need for this Disabled Journalists Association is so great because we don't have like a unifying force and voice, then they're not going to listen. And so if there's, you know, Wendy's at HuffPo, and she has a colleague, Elise. So Wendy and Elise are at HuffPo. They're two people, right? I don't even know who's at CNN, right? So they're alone and they can't speak up for fear of losing their jobs. But you know what? The Disabled Journalists Association can speak up. They can say things. There was a time when CNN fired literally all of their African American vice presidents, like in one fell swoop, they went in and just fired all of them. Because it was layoffs, but like, it's pretty targeted layoffs that now you have no Black people in management, like upper management, all of a sudden. And Turner had never, like Ted Turner, I'll give Ted Turner his props. Turner had, when he ran the company, it was very integrated, not with disability, but everything else. And when that happened, NABJ, the National Association of Black Journalists, they piped up and said, what's this? What is this? You can't do that. And Jeffrey Zucker, who's the president of CNN, said, yeah, I can. We'll pull your funding. And they said, oh, you're going to pull our funding? And this, like, word fight was going on in newspapers. They're like, you're going to pull our funding because we're calling you out for firing everybody. And then he, you know what he did? He went, no, I didn't say that. Blah, 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 blah. Because that's the power of these organizations where they're like, did you just say you were going to pull our funding? No, I didn't say that. No, no, no. We're very committed to this. And that's why we need our own organization that can start calling people out without fear of firing. Like, I don't care. Like, I work for DREDF, Disability Media Alliance Project. I'll say whatever I want to say about all of these organizations because it doesn't affect my money. It doesn't affect my career. But people in the middle of the newsroom can't do that. But they can be members of the group that does that.
Yeah, Judy, when you, I think you're in your question, you brought up like this idea of having to educate people. And that's really a major balance. It requires balancing, you know, your own time and energy to educate other people with like all the other work that you have to do on top of that. I think when I first joined HuffPost, you know, like any job, when you join a new organization, it takes some time to, you know, familiarize yourself with workplace culture, with your colleagues. But I knew that I wanted to somehow make a difference, you know, help to improve our coverage. And I think the work is really rewarding. I love my job so much. And I also love that, you know, I've almost been there 3 years. And in that time, I've been able to host trainings to, you know, educate really colleagues on it. And I'm really glad to say we've made a lot of progress in disability coverage. We don't really publish any sort of inspiration porn anymore, which, thank goodness. And I'm also seeing more editors and reporters proposing disability stories on their own. And that's been one of the most rewarding things to see, is that, like, you know, I don't want to be the one person who is like the go-to on all things disability. I love seeing when other colleagues step up and think about disability as well, regardless of whether they are disabled too. It just becomes part of our coverage. And of course, definitely room to grow. It kind of goes back to what I had mentioned before, which is that if there's just one disabled person at your workplace, that's really not enough, because then all the work does fall on them to educate everybody else. And so that's something that, like, is a big problem at newsrooms, but also workplaces in general. And I think, again, it's constantly having to ask, you know, what do I have the energy for today? What am I willing to spend a couple hours kind of explaining, you know, the angle we should take, or something about the language that we use. And I know I'm like not the only one at a workplace who has to, you know, who deals with this in general, but I think disabled people, the few that are in newsrooms, it's really tough as a whole.
I mean, I have to say, in the number of jobs that I've had that have not been within disability-run organizations, when you are the one or one of the few, it takes a fair amount of time. I mean, I'll speak for myself, but to really feel confident, not only in the work that I'm doing, but in how people feel about me, how they look at me, how, you know, their tone of voice. And when you get this kind of sense that you're not being looked at or thought about the same way someone in an equivalent position would be. So I think, you know, the point that we're making of needing more than one and looking at ways that we can change the culture, not just in journalism, but in every room, so that people with invisible disabilities also feel like they can disclose what their disabilities are, because that enriches the work that they're doing no matter what. I'm wondering also, you know, Kara, you're Black, Wendy, you're Chinese. Have you been able to get them to look at some of the issues that may be impacting Black disabled people or Asian disabled people, so that story becomes included?
So at my job now at Disability Media Alliance Project, I train newsrooms, and I make it I'm purposeful to include all of that, the intersections. I'm really passionate about the school to prison pipeline and prison populations. And so I do have large conversations about that, as well as environmental racism, which often causes disabilities in underserved communities. I believe that there's an article today, I think it's in the New York Times, I haven't had a chance to read it, about Black people living in these heat zones, because that's where they've been redlined, and what that does to health and causes things. So they're starting to see things, but I'd love to make the connections more deep. But that's what I've been doing, is going around in newsrooms, and they seem receptive. They also seem completely flabbergasted that they didn't know these things. I get a lot of, whoa, that's a lot to digest. And I'm like, yeah, I bet. I just threw a lot of stuff at you. Come back to me when you have questions. In fact, I'm helping a reporter at Fortune go through the disability tax. And we had this long conversation, and then I sent her a bunch of stats. And then she came back with an email that is so long with just questions. And that to me is great, because if she's coming back with an entire email of questions, then she's digging and thinking and like really thinking deeply. And that's what we need to start having, is these reporters not just having it on disabled journalists' back to do all of this digging, but have other people do the digging. And because that's how people will see it too, you know? Once you start getting people outside of the community digging around in it, then more people start to recognize it. It's just the way the world works. Like, Black people have been shouting about police violence, and like no one's listening. And now all of a sudden, everybody saw, I mean, they've been seeing, but George Floyd, and now everybody's like, oh.
Right.
And so that's what I'm hoping that journalism will come to, is we'll start seeing these little pockets of people popping up and starting to realize like how disability really just connects everything and can exacerbate poverty, racism, school, education, prison, like all of these things. It connects to, and depending on how people are treating people, it can make it worse. So that's what I'm hopeful about. And that's what I've been seeing, little glimmers of people kind of getting it.
Yeah. I'm glad to say I have been able to do more reporting on the intersection of being disabled and Asian. I'm disabled and Chinese American. So for Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, which is May, I was able to profile the disability activist Alice Wong, who created the Disability Visibility Project. And that was really amazing because, I mean, we're both disabled, we're both Chinese American. And so I know Alice mentioned to me during the interview that it really meant a lot to her to have someone who shared the same identities, because she felt like we could talk about things in a way that is much deeper. So we talked about how, you know, just in this last year, disabled Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have had to deal with both the recent rise in Asian hate incidents, but also a pandemic in which disabled people have constantly moved to the back of the line, have been an afterthought when it comes to treatments for COVID, for, you know, the fact that workplace accommodations are suddenly becoming more accepted, even though disabled people have been advocating for accommodations to be more accessible since like decades ago. So we talked a lot about that intersection. And so I've been really fortunate to be able to do some of that work. And I hope to, of course, continue to do so.
So we're coming to the end of our program. And I just want to say it's been a very rich discussion, and one that obviously will continue. And I want to make a couple of points. One is, the three of us today all had our disabilities either from birth or when we were young. And the majority of disabled people in the United States have their disabilities later. One of the important issues of having people like Kara and Wendy involved in this industry and the field of sharing accurate information that provokes thinking is to be able to help open the doors to look at people across the age range when they become disabled. And I want to thank you both for the work you're doing. And we obviously will continue to follow what's going on with the New Journalism Association. And I really appreciate very much your candid comments, because I think whatever field you're in, whether you have a disability or not. This type of really open, honest discussion, I hope, provokes people at the very least to look at themselves and what they do in their daily lives, whether they have a disability or not, and look at journalism as a road of being able to help strengthen our democracy and really bring the stories of disabled individuals from all crosswalks of life and all backgrounds to the forefront to enrich our communities. So thank you both very much. I look forward to working with you.
You have been tuning in to The Human Perspective with Judy Human. This week, our guests were Wendy Liu and Kara Reedy. Be sure to follow Wendy Liu on Twitter at Wendy Liu Writes and follow Kara Reedy at Infamously Short. Also, be sure to follow the Disability Media Alliance Project at Disability Map on Twitter. The intro music for The Human Perspective is Dragon, which is produced and performed by Lachi, Yontero, and Juaren. And the outro music is I Wait by Galen Lee. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to The Human Perspective, and follow Judy on Twitter at Judith Human and on Instagram and Facebook at The Human Perspective. Pain, eyes are pain, and so why?